And I'm going to introduce, first of all, Curtis Sly. He has served in the U.S. Army as a Sergeant First Class E7. Let's give him a round of applause.
I'm going to put my glasses on so I can see. Before I start, I just want to tell you a little bit about where I came from to where I am today. I grew up in a small town in South Carolina. I mean, when I say small town, I really mean a small town. We only had one traffic light, and I graduated in 1978, and my class size was 78. So, you know, I know all my classmates. I kind of still keep in touch with most of them, you know, throughout my travels. But growing up in a small town, it really helped me appreciate where I am today. And one of the things I did was, after I graduated, I was like, you know what, I got to do something with my life. I just didn't want to stay in a small town my whole life. So I decided, well, I'll join the service. I want to travel, but I don't want to spend my money traveling. So I said, I joined the Army September 17th, 1979. I went to Fort Jackson, South Carolina to in process, and my basic training was at Fort Benning, Georgia. And I can remember the bus ride just like it was yesterday. We was on the bus and everybody was laughing and talking, and we was just going along, you know, 19, 20 years old, not really knowing what's in store for us. And our drill sergeant was on the bus. He was nice and quiet, never saying anything to us the whole ride. So we get to Fort Benning and the bus stops, and that's when he yells at everybody and said, "You got 2 minutes to get off this bus, and a minute and 30 seconds is already gone." So I said, whoa, what did I get myself into? But I knew that it was a great decision for me to decide to serve my country. I've been in a lot of places. I've done a lot of things. And one of the things my uncle used to always tell me, you're going to eat things and you're going to do things that you never thought you would be able to do. And I really didn't understand that when he was telling me that at the time. But as I was going through basic training and realizing what he told me, it came loud and clear that he was correct. So, you know, he had done it before, so it really helped me grow up a lot. And being an infantry soldier is something really, really different. As an infantry soldier, you don't get the ideal living conditions. You're always wet, you're either cold or you're hungry, you're tired, but you have to keep going. And it's kind of that way in life, even though sometimes when I'm at work or around the house, I get tired, but it's inside me to keep going. You know, it's the same thing when you're sharing the word. It's, you know, you never get tired of sharing, and you never get tired of talking to people about the Lord. And I find myself doing it a lot more at work, almost on a daily basis. So all these things prepared me to be where I am today. I'm just going to share a couple places that I've been. My first duty station was in Fort Ord, California. So I went all the way from South Carolina to California. So, you know, at the age of 19. And when I got there, a couple times I would call my grandmother and said, I want to come home. She said, nope, you need to stay. So I decided that, you know, it was going to work for me. I stayed, and when I went home, every time I would go home, it always reinforced my decision that I made the right decision to leave home. I mean, every time, I just knew that if I had a doubt, all I had to do was go home, and I'll come back, and I'll know that it was the right place for me. It was the right thing for me to do. So I spent about a year in Fort Ord, California, and then I left there and went to Korea. So Korea was my second duty station. I can remember getting off the plane in Korea, and it was very, very hot. You know, it's either very hot or very cold in the wintertime. And, you know, I stayed there for 12 months. I left there and I went to Fort Stewart, Georgia. So I did a lot of traveling. So I went to Fort Stewart. It was closer to home. I was about 6 hours from home. So whenever I got a little homesick, I can always get on the bus or drive to home and come back. And that's how I met my wife. I was home on the weekend, and my brother was working with my wife, and he had hurt his back at work, so he needed his back brace. So I go down to the place where he was working, and I gave him the back brace, and then it kind of started from there. So we'll be celebrating our 26th anniversary next week, on the 9th, July 9th. So. So after Fort Stewart, I got another assignment. I got an assignment to be a recruiter. I was like, really? To be a recruiter? Like, not me. So I was obedient, and actually, the day before I got ready to go to recruiting school, I got married, and then I left the next day. So I was gone for 12 weeks, right? You know, I told my wife, is she sure she wanted to be a military wife? She said yes. So I said, well, this is life. This is how life is going to be. So I was gone for 12 weeks. I came back. We went to Detroit. So I went to Detroit, Michigan, and I spent about 6 years in Detroit as a Army recruiter. And I was in a recruiting station. I'm not sure if anybody is familiar with it, but it's Dearborn, Michigan. Dearborn is where Henry Ford, that's his hometown. It was a very, very... they stuck me in the rich area, so I can remember my first phone call to one of the kids, and the parent answered the phone and said, you know what, if I want my son to join the Army, I'll buy him the Army. So I knew that I had some challenges. I mean, I knew. I knew right away, but, you know, one of the things that I didn't do is I didn't give up. I later... probably after a year or two there, I was the top recruiter in our company, our battalion for the whole year. So, you know, it's perseverance. Don't give up. Just because there's odds against you, it don't have to be that way. Just keep going. So I did that. And then we went to, actually that's where both of the girls was born. There's both was born in Dearborn. Latasha is the oldest, and then Brittany is the youngest. So, we left there and we went to North Carolina. I was still doing the recruiting, but going from Michigan to North Carolina was about an hour, almost 2 hours from home. I said that would be kind of good, but I didn't really realize that it was much more difficult to recruit in North Carolina than it was in Michigan. So it's kind of hard to, you know, take people away from their farms and things like that. So, but I was successful there. And then I got another assignment. I got another assignment to go back to Fort Ord, California. So I was happy. I had been there before, but the family has never been there. So I did that. And then I stayed there for about almost 2 years. Then they closed Fort Ord. And after that, I got another assignment that I've been waiting to get for about 13 years, and I finally got it. And I got an assignment to go to Hawaii. So I spent 4 years in Hawaii. So, and I learned all the places that I've been and all the things I've done, I've always embraced the culture wherever I've been. So, you know, my stay in Hawaii, I went to Japan 5 times. I've been to Guam, Thailand. So I've done a lot of traveling. So it was great. Everything that I wanted to do, I was doing. So, and then, it was towards the end of my career, and I got an assignment to come here to Fort Lewis. But I really wanted to go to Fort Benning or somewhere in that area because it would be closer to home. But they sent me here, and I'm thankful for it. At the time, I wasn't. But when I got here, it was in August of 97, and I said, they say rain here? I'm like, it doesn't rain here. I'm like, this place is beautiful. But I think came October, it felt like I didn't see the sun for about 3 months. I don't know if it was that long, but it just felt that way. And I said, I'm never going to stay here. But I'm still here. And then I met Miguel. And Miguel's my neighbor. He lives across the street from me. And he asked me, did I have a church home? And I said, no. So he said, come to my church. So we all came. And I knew from the very first day that I walked through the door that this was the place for us. And I've been here ever since. And I don't plan on going anywhere else. So that's my experience. Thank you, guys.
Hello. Thank you, Curtis. Praise the Lord. Okay. All right. Next up, I'd like to have Hector Perez come up. He also served in the U.S. Army, and he had retired at an E6 staff sergeant.
Hello, everybody. Well, let me correct that. I did not retire. If I retired, I'd probably be living rich. I'm Hector Perez. And, you know, as Curtis was saying, I come from a very small town, so much smaller than Curtis, we didn't even have traffic light. I also come from a very small island, in the middle of the Caribbean Sea called Puerto Rico. Beautiful, but hot. I don't like it. That's why I live in this great nation. It's called the United States of America. I served in the military for just under 11 years and 1 year in the Air Force Reserve. I served in the Army first. I joined the Army in 1975, and I came from Puerto Rico to Atlanta, Georgia. And you go from 90-degree weather wearing t-shirts like these ladies and the choir and the choir members were wearing today to 10 below in the Atlanta, Georgia weather, and you freeze to death. And that's exactly what I did. I caught pneumonia the very first day that I came into the United States. So you learn things, you know. I never knew about, I didn't know there was such a place as that it was so cold that you couldn't stand. And that was my first time in the cold. I fell in love with cold weather from there on. As everybody here knows that knows me, I love the cold weather. Okay, I'm a cold weather person. I'm looking one day to maybe retire in Alaska. If I ever retire. Anyway, I served in the military and the Army. First, I got my basic training in Fort Jackson, South Carolina. I like that part of the country. It's very pretty. You know, when the song that song about the 50 states, I've been to every one of them except Hawaii. And I had no desire to go to Hawaii. It's too hot for me. But I've been in all the 48 continental states, and they all have something different, something beautiful. And, thank that God for giving me that opportunity, and the military gave me that opportunity to see a lot, to learn a lot. When I joined the Army, I spoke not even a word in English. I don't speak much of it today either, but I'm a little bit better. And I joined the Army. I had a little struggle in the first few weeks. But by the time I left basic training, I was speaking English without help. It took a lot of doing. It took a lot of applying yourself, and I learned, and I did not need an interpreter after my first 6 weeks in the military. And I haven't had to have an interpreter since then. And, coming from a small, being a small country boy like I was born, I'll go to city once a week, and that was a big thing. I never liked the cities. So, joined the military, the Army. I was armorer, fixing weapons, issuing out weapons. I liked the job, but then I said, I learned something different. And then I became a cook. And I cooked for 10 years. That's why I do what I do around here sometimes, in cooking. So I had a great experience, I went to did my advanced training in Fort Lee, Virginia. Oh, what a beautiful place. Beautiful place, East Coast. And then I went to Texas. Oh, my God. You talk about hot. Texas, everything is bigger in Texas. Even the dial and the thermometer, it gets bigger and bigger every time. Because, you know, in 1981, I was there, and we have 52 days straight. The temperature never went below 106, day or night. So experience, you get to learn experiences when you're in the military. I was a cook, and I did a lot of things. I worked for a dining facility in Germany, which I spent 3 years in Germany. I loved Germany. Oh, it was so good, so pretty country. The people are very friendly. And again, you know, I went to Germany, and all the military over there had to go and take an advanced course for learning the language a little bit. And the teacher, after the end of my 2 weeks there, she said, "You've been in Germany before?" I said, "No, never. This is my first time." "How can you speak the language so easy?" I said, "I just learned it here." And after 2 weeks, I was able to go into town and speak in German to the German people and communicate. So I learned German. I've forgotten most of it. It's been 26 or so years since I've been there. So great country, great place of the world to visit. And I recommend it. So you get to do all of that when you join the military. And one of my most, not my best memory, but one of my most, the most fresh things that I learned in the military is this thing. I served 1 year in Korea. Korea, South Korea, is a small little peninsula on the Pacific, just between Japan and the mainland there. Small country. In 1979, I was there for the whole year. A military coup tried to take over that country, killed the president. And I thank God. I didn't know it then. I went through a lot of hard time because the military alert that we were for about 90 days. But if the United States Army, Air Force, Marines, and Navy were not there, the little country of South Korea today would be probably under the control of the communist North Korea. So you see, the country, the men and women that serve the United States Army, not only protect the freedom here, but it protects the freedom abroad. And I didn't understand it then. Why do I have to sacrifice for these people that I don't even know that existed? But you learn to do things. You know, today South Korea is one of the biggest thriving economy around the world. They produce cars. If you see container shipping in there, you think China is big? They're nothing compared to South Korea, what they're doing shipping and around the world. So our contribution to the military helps people all over the world, not just here. So we have something. I'm very proud of this country. I'm very proud of this country because it is my country since the day I was born. And there's no better country in the world. There's great places to visit. There's great sights and places to see all over the world, which I've seen a lot of them. But there's no place like the United States of America. And I learned that by serving in the Army. As a young boy, when I joined the Army, a young boy, you know, I weighed 128 pounds. You can't tell now, can you? And I gained a lot of weight. And I grew 6 inches in basic training and advanced training in 8 weeks. Not only grew, but gained weight. So I was still a little boy. I wasn't fully grown up yet. So ladies and men, fathers, mothers, if your young son or daughter wants to join the military, encourage them to do so. Because the military will make you or break you. And so those that are there on the borderline, encourage them. That's a great adventure, and it's a great learning experience. I don't think the parents can really give that experience to their kids until they go out there on their own And they have to learn that discipline that it takes to serve the military. And that discipline that you learn serving in the military goes with you for the rest of your life. Well, that's all I got.
Thank you, Hector. All right, next up, Chuck Stottlemyre. He served in the U.S. Coast Guard. And when he, I don't know if he retired, when he left the Coast Guard, he was second-class electrician.
Am I on? Semper Paratus, we sang that in the Coast Guard segment. It means always ready. And just like Hector, there's a lot to be learned in the Coast Guard as well. Most of the people I knew that were in the, that were a Coastie, Ray over there is one, went in because they wanted to see what they did. And our main, when I was in, our main focus was life-saving, aids to navigation. Now it's gone back to its original format, which was started by Alexander Hamilton, drug interdiction, alcohol, things like this. They interdict smuggling now, so they've more or less gone a complete circle. 41 degrees, 46 minutes west, 50 degrees, 12 minutes north. That was, for a while, my brother's ocean station. That's the last reported position of the Titanic. They transmit, it's done by Lockheed's equipment now, but they transmit a Loran beacon that is steered on by ships and planes traveling across the Atlantic, and there's also a station, Net Ocean Station November, out in the middle of the Pacific that does the same thing. My commanding officer, Robert Lucas, he's a retired admiral now, knew my dad 20 years earlier when he was a lieutenant down at Long Beach. Another favorite saying is that in the Coast Guard, you're liable to meet somebody who knew somebody you knew. It's such a small service. There are no more than 35,000 personnel at any time around the world. So it's a very small service. My best example of leadership was my ex-chief electrician, who I went over to Vietnam with, and Captain Lucas. I say he was my best example of leadership because he knew how to lead. He knew how to motivate. And I was not very motivated at the time. I'd been a third-class electrician for about a year and a half before I finally got out as an E5 after being an E5 for three whole days. At any rate, before we left for Vietnam, our ship had some bottom work done. That's where they put the ship up in a dry dock and they do what they need to do on the bottom. And in the meantime, we'd organized our storage locker. And as the captain was coming around to do his operational inspection before we put the ship back in the water, I was detailed to stand by the compartment. And the captain came in and looked around. He says, "You know, Chief, I don't know what you keep in here, but I have no doubt I'd find it." And the chief said, "Of course, Captain, these are my electricians." I never forgot that. I never forgot that. He gave credit where credit was due. He didn't take credit for anything that was done by us. And I determined at that point that if I ever advanced on up a little bit farther, that that was the example I was going to set for my troops, the men that worked, or women that worked under me. There were no women in the on the seagoing units of the Guard at that time. There was a big, huge argument over whether to let them on any seagoing unit. So, oh, I had lost my train of thought. Anyway, we get over to Vietnam, and lo and behold, we relieve my brother's ship, because my brother went across one patrol before we did, so he was on the cutter called the Ingham, and his captain found out I was on my captain's ship, so he brought Rod over, and we visited for 2.5 hours, halfway around the world. And that was kind of neat. My brother came into the Guard 3 weeks after I did. We both went through Alameda boot camp down down near Oakland. And he didn't fill his dream sheet out. Some of you service that have been in the service, you know what your dream sheet is. That's where you put down where you want to serve. I put down for the East Coast. Rod put down for the West Coast. He wound up at Newport News. I wound up in Seattle. And as Hector and several of the other men have indicated, for those of you young people that are considering the service, don't be afraid to enlist, or don't be afraid to go to school and get a commission. It will take any rough edges you have off. And if it doesn't, it'll put you under. Just like everybody's saying, it's an interesting adventure, but don't be afraid of it. You serve honorably. And you come out walking with your head up a little bit higher. I know I do. The Coast Guard, as I said, was a very, very small service. Very, very small. But it does a big, huge job. A big, huge job. There's a lot of drugs out there. They've learned things I wish I knew. I would have liked to have been involved in the drug interdiction, the piracy, and the some of the stuff that they do. But as I say, it's geared mainly towards life-saving, and that's constructive. And a lot of people that went in were not aware of that. I was stationed initially down in the Columbia River on a little buoy tender, and we went up and down from Astoria all the way to the Dells. That was our river run. And I remember one day we had gone down to Owasco. As I say, being on a buoy tender, you service buoys, aids to navigation. And we had what's called a nun buoy. It's so named because it looks like a nun's shroud. It's shaped kind of like a nun's shroud. And it needed to be positioned. Some vessel had come through and knocked it off station, so we were supposed to put it back on station. Well, the captain decided, well, I'm going to set it with my seaman's eye. So he looked over at this landmark, and says, all right, clout the pelican hook. The pelican hook holds the sinker on that the buoy is attached to keep it on station. Down it went, down, and the nun leaped off the boat over the side. We went on upriver to do some other stuff. We came back, and the tide had gone out. There's the nun buoy laying down right here with the sinker right next to it about 12 feet offshore. At the same time, National Geographic went out just outside the Columbia River Bar. You have three sea buoys out there that guide ships to the entrance of the Columbia River Bar. And they were going to photograph and do an article on the fur. The Coast Guard had a neat system for naming their ships. You could tell by the name what kind of a vessel you were dealing with. All the buoy tenders were named after trees and shrubs. My ship was the Bluebell. They were on the fur. And so they were going to set one of the sea buoys while the National Geographic wrote the article up and took photographs. And this sea buoy, it was very critical because it sat right on the edge of the continental shelf. It was about 300 foot. It had a really long chain and a cable. And off the continental shelf is more like 3,000 feet. So again, this guy decides he's going to set that buoy with a seaman's eye. So he takes several visual sightings. They clout the pelican hook. Down goes the sinker and down goes the buoy. Blink, 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 blink. One of the reporters said, I guess they're going to cover the submarine races. Oh, boy. Well, those are some of the experience I had as a coastie. One of our nicknames is Coast Toasties. But, again, I encourage any of you young people that are considering the military, Coast Guard, Air Force, Marines, Army, don't be afraid of it. Yeah, you might hear some horror stories. There's horror stories all over real life. We're hearing some right now today. But don't be afraid, young people, of considering service. It's honorable. There's benefits. And if you stay in the 20 years, there's lifetime benefits. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chuck. Okay. And lastly, I asked Art Valenzuela to come up. He was U.S. Army, Staff Sergeant, E6.
Wow, you guys are great. Well, I'm an Army brat. So I didn't come from the small towns or the cities. I went all over the U.S. And I had no illusions when it came my time to sign up for the Army. I enlisted at 17. And when I finished high school, on the day of my graduation, I was off to Fort Knox, Kentucky, to learn to become a 19 Delta, which is a cavalry scout. And if you know anything about John Wayne and the Yellow Rose of Texas, that influenced my career choice greatly. But as an Army brat, and I say this with high regard, I had the privilege to travel all over the United States, and some of the places I've been to, I've enjoyed. And when I joined the service, I had no illusions as to why I went in there. But I was in the regulars for 4.5 years. And I signed in as a cavalry scout, and it started with the armored cav. And then I had numerous other jobs in the Army. You go in as one thing and you come out with many other hats to wear. I was an armorer. I was an administrator. And I was an aero scout, and I was an air assault. So I had quite a range of experiences. And during those years, in 4 years' time, I became a Sergeant E5. And when I left the service and I came back here, I joined the 105th Training Division over here at Fort Lewis, and I became trained for a drill sergeant. And then when my time was up there, I joined the Washington National Guard and went back to my first love as a Cav Scout. And all told, I spent 13 years in service to this nation in those three services. My first overseas assignment was in Waldflicken, Germany. And that translates into the wild place, and that's what it was. It was an American base that had taken over a German base that wasn't discovered until the end of the war. It was an old SS Nazi base. And we had a joke about that place. The joke was that if we made it out of the voter pool, we would survive the war. And during that time was the Cold War, and Waldflicken in Germany is the most forward deployed of the U.S. forces bases on the east-west German border. And the whole mountain was pre-plotted with artillery. So, that's what we were going to face if that day had come. And our job was to get down to the Fulda Gap, which historically has been a main invasion route of Europe for as long as there's been warfare over there. And we had a track that I was assigned to. And when I say track, it's an armored personnel carrier, small little box. We called it the coffin. To some of you, it's the M113. And we sat right there at the gate, and our whole mission in life was to tell them when they crossed the border. And that's, that's the life of a scout. So I learned a whole bunch of things, and then from Germany, I went to Fort Hood, Texas. And you talk about weather extremes. One day it's 60 degrees and I'm wearing woolens. The next day I'm getting off the plane down in Texas and it's 100 degrees. And so thus started my career in Texas, which I dearly loved. And I'll tell you what, I love it cold. I love it hot. I don't care where the Army sends me. I was loving it. So I have lots of stories. I have had good experiences. I've had difficult experiences, nothing uncommon to a soldier. But I don't regret my service. I would have loved to have done gotten a retirement out of it, but I was there to serve. I was there to serve. And as I said before, I was a military brat, and two places that we were assigned to was in Georgia and Virginia. And They're beautiful places, and they're a place of history. And I'm a history buff, and I like to read history, and I'm a big-time student of the Civil War, and recently become more engaged with the Revolutionary War. But I have walked those battlefields. You know, the Civil War battlefields are big and massive. And the battlefields of the Revolution are very small, you know. But what makes a man stand in a hail of gunfire, of lead and steel, all sorts of nasty things being thrown at you? What makes him stand and go through that, you know? Without the, it seems like a cliche that freedom isn't free. It's not a cliche. These men did this work. You know, our country is built on the blood, sweat, tears, and vision of our fathers and their forefathers. And you know, in my military family, my great grandfather was. I mean, my grandfather was killed in the Battle of the Bulge in World War II. My other grandfather, he served in the Pacific Theater during World War II and Korea as an Army Ranger. And we've lost relatives. We know that. We've experienced it. My father served 6 tours in Vietnam. You know, and nothing's like sitting there at home, you come home after school and your dad's happened to take a nap and he's screaming in terror from the experiences that he had to live through over there in Vietnam. So all this had a bearing on me to join. You know, you're going to be in a military family, more than likely you're going to join the military at some point. And besides the vim and the vinegar that I had in my youth, I go back to a time when I was 10 years old. And it was probably the happiest time that I've had in my life. It was in my bedroom. Right next to my bed was a nightstand, and I read my own Bible of my own volition. And I came across this scripture that has formed my opinions and kept me going forward to this day. No greater love a man has than this is one who's willing to give his life for his friends. And you guys are my friends. And I am not going to let anybody take away our freedoms of choice to worship God. I will stand there even if I have to stand there by myself. And that's the attitude I went. And I have met men that are like that. We've got a lot of men like that. I joined in the peacetime army. It was a time of transition. The army today is so different. I don't even recognize it. And the quality of the men, it's vast. The training is great. Those men have a purpose. So when you see a fellow soldier, give him respect. He's probably doing something that you couldn't do. Thank God he's there. Thank God he's there. You know, and even today, I'm no longer part of the services, but my heart's still there. And if they really need me, I'll be there. That's about all I have to say.
Okay, thank you, Art. At this time, I would just like to have those of you who, you know, maybe still struggle with things from your service time, to have Pastor pray for you this morning. And he's going to be here, you know, even right now, to have even prayer for our military, for our service workers, for our police officers. I know we have some paramedics in our body. We have people that are community service workers, and they serve day in and day out for our local communities. And so we want to give you honor today as well for that. So we do have some paramedics and firemen and police officers in our body, so let's give them a hand also here this morning. Okay, so at this time, if you'd like to have some prayer or to just protection for yourself, for your daily job, Pastor is here to pray for you this morning, and we just encourage you to come forward.
Well, I'm in God's army. Man, if you've been down the road with the people I've been down the road with, you give me a purple hearts, boy. Right and left. So let's all stand up and we'll get ready to dismiss. And those of you that would like prayer, I'll be up here waiting for you. And I'll just be glad to pray for you and with you on this wonderful time for us to set aside to just celebrate our freedom. You know, Easter is our 4th of July as believers, but this is the 4th of July of our nation. And I'm going to tell you what, I love and honor and respect the men who have given their lives. Even though we sometimes have problems with our leadership, but I'll tell you what, I don't have a problem with a person who has given their life for us. Amen. So that we have the freedom to walk the streets and have families and have homes. And it's very honorable for all that. And I know that war can be a very, very difficult thing for a lot of people. I just recently was watching that HBO, The Pacific, and how that war went, and that was a nightmare. It was horrible, and those guys went through that for our freedom, and I respect them for it. Amen. Father, I thank you so much for the wonderful privilege of listening to these great men who have served their country and have given up a portion of their life to serve it. And Father, we thank you for the wonderful privilege that we have as Americans. And Father, I pray that whatever is ahead, Father, if it is difficult, we as Americans, we will survive, we will join together, and we will win in Jesus' name.